the reopening of South Florida, the first phase.
Southeast Florida, even though they had to face the most significant epidemic in the state of Florida, they flattened the curve and they are ready to move to phase one.
Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. So what does phase one of reopening South Florida look like? Have you made a restaurant reservation? Will you go to a shopping mall? Are you returning to your workplace? How about Governor Ron DeSantis's handling of the pandemic, especially in South Florida, the hardest hit region of the state? And how could the response to COVID-19 affect efforts to combat climate change here? Your phone calls coming up on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN next after the news. Our program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and for supporting public radio. More than 2 months after being told to stay home, South Florida is beginning to reopen. A full statewide phase one just announced on this Friday afternoon by Governor Ron DeSantis at a news conference in Jacksonville. The governor also approved this week Broward and Miami-Dade County's request to start up their local economies again, beginning on Monday. During that announcement that was made on Thursday, the Broward County Mayor Dale Holness talked about coordinating the response with Miami-Dade County.
South Florida region is one community. We are in this together, and we must work in a collaborative manner as we go forward to beat this COVID-19 virus.
Now, we did see some difference in how the three big South Florida counties had responded to this. Palm Beach County broke off a little bit earlier. It reopened this week on Monday after asking the governor for an earlier start date. Commissioners there are discussing today on this Friday how beaches could reopen sooner as well in Palm Beach County. So all this hour on the South Florida Roundup, reopening efforts here in South Florida. Let's begin with WLRN's Palm Beach reporter. Wilkin Brutus is with us on the telephone. What's the latest of this Palm Beach County Commission meeting about the potential fuller reopening on Monday, May 18th, including beaches, Wilkin?
Yeah, sure. Palm Beach County commissioners have voted 5-2 to reopen public beaches Monday, May 18th. And Commissioner Melissa McKinley basically struck down restrictions on concessions allowing umbrellas and chairs. Commissioner Weiss and Bernard were the two opposing votes from that. So, yeah, officially, Palm Beach County beaches are open.
The sand will be open on Monday then. Any resident restrictions or open for any and all who can get there?
Yeah, so county attorney says Palm Beach County had the legal basis for instituting a resident-only rule for Palm Beach County beaches. But due to grant funding, the county is required to open up beaches to everyone. So there were some initial concerns that were in regards to beachgoers from Broward and Miami-Dade possibly inundating Palm Beach County beaches, but that was set aside. And so there's no longer a resident-only access.
So open for any and all who can come. We saw that earlier this week, when we saw Naples beaches have to close for a time period because the local officials were concerned about the lack of social distancing and facial coverings. Any of those kind of requirements in place for Palm Beach County beaches?
Well, it looks like the county and city are responsible for social distancing guidelines, but on a micro level, that responsibility for maintaining social distancing falls on the lifeguards. And Commissioner Greg Weiss raised concerns about this, suggesting that separate resources should probably be allocated since the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office aren't responsible for looking out in terms of compliance. That's a huge concern during the commission meeting today, but it looks like that is being addressed later on.
So how about PPE, the personal protection equipment for lifeguards at Palm Beach County on Monday when the beaches reopen? Will they be supplied with facial coverings and gloves, for instance?
That was not addressed at the commission meeting. In fact, during a public comment, an ocean rescue EMT, a lifeguard representative, expressed concerns about opening up the beaches on Memorial Day, saying crowded beachgoers will be difficult to maintain. And he also did not mention any protection gear at all.
So Palm Beach County beaches, the sand reopening on May 18th. WLRN's Palm Beach County reporter Wilkin Brutus with us live here on this Friday. Wilkin, thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you.
We're going to be talking about the South Florida response here all hour long. It's been nearly 2 months since the pandemic shut down much of the region. So we thought it certainly would be worthwhile to see how things have gone so far and to reflect a little bit on the moment that we've all lived through and continue to live through. So to help with that, joined by our panel of opinion page editors from across South Florida and the major media organizations, Nancy Ankrum with our partner, the Miami Herald, Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post, and Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. To all of you, welcome back to the roundup here. And I hope for all three of you, you, your families and colleagues have been safe. It's been a while since we've had our band here together. So welcome in, everybody.
Yeah, good to be here.
I like to hear the chorus of voices. I tell you, we're all social distancing by a factor of many miles in some cases as the four of us get back together here on the roundup. Let's start in Palm Beach County, Rick. You just heard from our reporter, Wilkin Brutus, that the Sands will reopen on the beach on Monday. What's your take of that early opening?
Well, I think it's a good idea to go ahead and do it, given the fact that there's so many people who want to. I think the real question has always been with regard to reopening, whether or not we can do it safely and whether or not we will be guided by the data rather than by the passions of a handful of protesters. And that's what we've always asked. I think I heard Wilkins mention an issue regarding social distancing and who was going to monitor that and make sure that happened on the beaches, because we know how we tend to congregate. Particularly next to the ocean. So overall, I'm glad that the commission decided to go ahead and do it and everything. But again, my concern, and I think the concern of most people who've actually have been, most Floridians who've actually been the reason why we've been able to flatten the curve as much as we have, is with how are we going to do this safely to make sure that we don't have a resurgence or something of the virus.
Yeah, let's just move down the coast a little bit to Broward County. Rosemary O'Hara with the Sun Sentinel. You know, a lot of Broward residents, a lot of Dade residents for that matter, they've been pining to get outside, get on the sand, maybe looking longingly at Palm Beach County in the days ahead.
Absolutely. I think there's concern that in Palm Beach that people from Broward will go up the coast to go to the beach. There was some kind of talk about, oh, you got to be from Palm Beach County in order to go to the beach here. How are you going to enforce that? The disappointment from Broward's point of view is that Palm Beach broke out of the regional collaboration and decided to go forward on its own. In Broward, they don't want to open the beaches before Memorial Day, believing that, you know, this pent-up desire to get outside will create throngs at the beach over Memorial Day weekend. So they're looking more for a Tuesday, you know, kind of opening so that there's not so many crowds. But, you know, I got to say, there are always exceptions to the rule, and we've seen that with the opening of South Point Park in Miami or, as you said, in Naples. But when I go to the beach, I'm much farther than 6 feet away from the person next to me. And if somebody gets in 6 feet, I feel like, you know.
Rosemary, you got to tell us what beach you're going to if you got that much space to move around. Because the beaches I tend to go to in Dade County, you got to show up early and leave early in order to be able to be at least 6 feet away from your neighbor. Nancy Ankrum, how about it? As we look north to Palm Beach County, is, you know, what we're going to see on Monday, is that going to be potentially the future for Miami Beach and Bags Beach on Key Biscayne when those eventually get the green light to open?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what keeps me gobsmacked is that we don't seem to learn lessons from our neighbors, not just to the near north, but to the far north. And we got a taste of this when Miami-Dade County opened parks, golf courses, and marinas. Did you see what happened at the marina in extreme South Dade, where people showed up in droves, showed up the night before, and many had to be turned away? What are we expecting here when the beaches open? And what are we prepared to handle? And that is the huge question mark. especially as Memorial Day weekend approaches. Are we learning any lessons from other states where we see nail salons and barbershops opening? And yes, of course, people now testing positive for the coronavirus. I am stunned at the lack of confidence that so many of our elected officials are giving us in the rush to reopen.
Let's ask South Florida if they're ready to go back to the beach. Will they be going to Palm Beach County on Monday when the sand opens there? What about restaurants opening at 50% capacity in South Florida, in Dade and Broward County, already opened in Palm Beach County and Monroe County? Do you have your reservations all set? Are you have your shopping list ready for a shopping mall, for instance? As South Florida reopens here on the South Florida Roundup, we would like to hear from you. Please give us a call at your convenience, 800-743-WLRN. The phone line's open right now, 800-743-9576. You can also send us a tweet at Florida. No, it's at WLRN. That's the Twitter handle that we want to use here for this hour. We've got our panel of opinion page editors from across South Florida. Nancy Ankrum, you just heard from her on the phone from the Miami Herald. We've got Rosemary O'Hara on FaceTime audio from the South Florida Sun Sentinel and Rick Christie on the telephone from the Palm Beach Post. What drove the call to reopen, Rick? You mentioned science and data, not listening to a small group of protesters. We have seen a few protests here and there, some last week around the Freedom Tower in Miami. We've seen a few in Broward and Dade County here and there, especially when the governor tends to show up for news conferences. We saw a small protest in Key West, for instance, this week. Rick, from your perspective, the push to reopen, understandable, yes. Is it backed by the confidence of the data?
Yeah, I didn't, to be honest with you, I did not think so initially when we had the make the call to reopen, and I actually am skeptical of whether or not it really backs it up now, because the primary source, primary piece of data that we've always tried to keep in mind, according to the initial CDC guidelines, anyway, it was 14 consecutive days of decrease in the number of cases, and that just has not happened. And so what I think that our commission came under a great deal of pressure from certain areas of our county, because we're a pretty big county with about, 40 municipalities. And there was a certain amount of pressure in some of our communities to start reopening and everything, because they didn't think they were seeing that many cases and so on and so forth. And so some of our commissioners kind of yielded to that and were able to bring along a couple of other folks with them. And then they also tried to rely on our health director in terms of her stuff and what she was telling them. And she, it was interesting at the commission hearing where she did not exactly say it was a good thing to reopen, but she didn't say it was a bad thing either. And like she was walking some kind of political tightrope, which was really frustrating. So I think it was just a matter of the commissioners, enough of a majority of them anyway, hearing from some of their constituents and not wanting to be lumped in with Broward and Miami-Dade because we didn't have as many cases.
Yeah, and but we've seen some of this tension play out, right, Rick? Even inside counties, as you mentioned, in Broward County, some cities had been asking for a reopening sooner than the overall county. We spoke with the Fort Lauderdale mayor, Dean Trentalis, last week right here on the Roundup, and he talked about Broward County data that point to federal gating criteria for reopening. Here's what the mayor of Fort Lauderdale said.
So far, we've seen no increase in the incidence of this disease, and the statistics in terms of those who have contracted the disease and the number of people taking the test has remained low. So they're, again, staying within the statistical data that the CDC have indicated would require us to achieve in order to move into phase one.
And so here we are in on the eve of phase one, at least for Broward County and Miami-Dade County. Rosemary O'Hara with the Sun Sentinel, what do you think about that push from cities like Fort Lauderdale to reopen? Did that lead the charge for the county to then engage with the state to get the official green light for a May 18th partial reopening?
Unquestionably. Broward does not have a strong mayor, county mayor, and it has shown the weakness of our system has shown bright during this process. So Fort Lauderdale took the lead in wanting to ask the governor to lift the lockdown order. And that push came from the business community. And lost, I think, sometimes, you know, in our desire to stay safe and to stay alive and to protect the vulnerable among us, what probably hasn't, the voice that hasn't been heard loudly enough are those business people who are struggling to hold on and who are really desperate. And in fact, I think some of them have already started working again, judging by the traffic on the roads. So I think the mayor is, and in shutting down these businesses, how hard it was for mayors to say, you know, I'm sorry, mom and pop restaurant, you've got to close. Some really tough conversations were held. That said, to the data that is available is so so high level, so non-granular, that it's hard to know really what the picture is. On the state dashboard, yes, the numbers are trending down. There's been some days where there's been spikes, but the overall trend is down. But it is, you know, the Miami-Dade mayor, Carlos Jimenez, required hospitals to give him, tell me today, how many people are in the hospital today with coronavirus? And he knows that, you know, 650, 700 people are in hospitals today.
That was just one example, Rosemary, right, of where local leaders kind of stepped in front of the state, the Miami-Dade County mayor requiring that data from hospitals. And of course, we saw earlier, Nancy Ankrum with the Miami Herald, how South Florida local leaders began to close down or slow down commerce well before the state ever stepped in.
Absolutely. That order from Jimenez was for nursing homes because the state has been such a laggard in testing in nursing homes throughout the state. And the number, we don't know the true numbers, and that is such a problem. Yes, local leaders, especially in the cities and in South Florida counties, came out way ahead, which was all to the good. I think it was back in February that our Miami mayor, Francis Suarez, canceled Kyocho and the Ultra Music Festival. Way out ahead, ahead, looking at the horizon and saying, it's really cloudy out there.
But,
you know, unfortunately, reopening should go hand in hand with increased testing and with the insistence on testing and the availability of testing, because we do know that asymptomatic people can spread this disease.
Let me give folks the phone number here, Nancy, and step in real quick. 800-743-9576. You may have been just listening to the news conference from Governor Ron DeSantis on the radio. We're back now live here on this Friday on the South Florida Roundup with the opinion page editors of the major media organizations in South Florida, from north to south, the Palm Beach Post and Rick Christie, South Florida Sun Sentinel, Rosemary O'Hara, and Nancy Ankrum is the opinion page editor at our partner, the Miami Herald. 800-743-9576. Full phase one statewide reopening on May 18th. The beaches scheduled to be reopened in Palm Beach County on May 18th. That's Monday. Restaurants can operate at 50% capacity in their dining rooms. Retail stores, shopping malls back open at 50%. Gyms reopening again. Pro sports training, the governor says, gets the green light. How about it, South Florida? Your thoughts, your experiences now, 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN, or on Twitter at WLRN. The Miami-Dade draft plan for reopening was released, Nancy Ankrum, over 180 pages long. Lots of very specific details in there that really struck me, including how hotels are to treat their credit card readers. Is there any stone left unturned in this plan?
Well, you know, I have not gone through the entire plan. I'm concerned that there is this desire to get back to normal, but that the rest of us are going to be left with that day to day. Is it safe? Is it safe to leave my child at a child care center now that I can go back to work? Oh, do I get on an elevator with this unmasked man? And like that. We are left to make those decisions, to negotiate our own safety on our own, I think, in too many cases.
Rosemary, pick up that point that Nancy makes. Governments can come up with plans, task forces can release PowerPoints, but ultimately it is up to the individual and individual actions. Just as we saw the reporting from the Tampa Bay Times this week when they got a hold of some cell phone tracking data, that it wasn't the stay-at-home orders that began to have people stay at home. It was actually the closing of schools, which in some cases happened weeks before the stay-at-home orders were put into place.
And it was the closing of schools, but it was also the talk in D.C. and the CDC and Dr. Fauci telling us all to shelter at home. So those of us who don't have kids in schools were also, our cell phones were not, you know, making the trips that they used to make. So, yeah, people responded before, they didn't wait for government. What's interesting to me in the enforcement of it is that, you know, we've looked to the national government to provide, you know, guidelines, and there's been a resistance to do that. So we look to the state to provide guidelines, and there's been a reluctance to do that. So we look to the counties to do it. And I think Miami-Dade has done a really masterful job, should be applauded. In Broward, what those guidelines are were just for the first time we got a peek of them on Thursday. And in the end, it's the cities that have to enforce these orders. And in some ways, it is the individual. So if you as an individual see somebody, you know, a group of 50 congregating at the beach, what are you supposed to do? So, it's, you know, yeah. there needs to be enforcement. And how does that happen?
Good question. Sandra in Lake Worth on line three has a comment related to that. Sandra, welcome to the Roundup. Thanks for calling in. You're on the radio.
Thank you very much. I really enjoy your show. I listen to it on my lunch break.
Thank you.
My question is about face masks. Everybody wants to open, and I had a conversation earlier with someone who said that, yes, everybody who works in a business that is the service provider should be obligated to wear a mask to protect their customers, but why can't customers be expected to reciprocate out of respect for that service provider?
Great question in Lake Worth. Let me put it to Rick Christie, as you're on the cusp of reopening the beaches in Palm Beach County, and Palm Beach County got the special go-ahead a week ago from the governor to reopen restaurants in South Florida, the first big South Florida county to do it. How about that idea? Yeah, you know, customers, clients may have to wear masks, or rather the workers may have to wear masks, but why not the customers?
Well, yeah, I actually agree with her that they should. I think that having wait staff have to wear masks and not having customers do it, it just looks, you know, it just makes no sense, really, because the danger is the mask actually helps, obviously, with or from what we know anyway, from a person who may be infected spreading the virus. So it doesn't do the person who is serving any good, you know, if the person that they are serving, you know, doesn't have a mask on. I think that the commission will continue to look at this and continue to go with recommendations. And I think this is happening all around the state, that as we move into these reopening phases and stuff like that, and they hear feedback from people like this caller from Lake Worth, they will actually start adjusting some of this stuff. Because, again, nobody wants to see a resurgence of the virus. And actually in our editorial about when they first started talking about the reopening, it is one of the things that we suggested, that both the customers and the wait staff have to wear masks, that the wait staff should actually use gloves, that there be hand sanitizer, and all of that stuff. And I hope that these things will be adjusted as we go along.
Yeah, and we'll see what kind of what the retail accountability is like for businesses and your fellow shoppers or customers that may not necessarily be following the letter of what the public health officials are recommending, so as to avoid any risk of a second wave of the pandemic as Florida begins to reopen. Folks, hold on the line. Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post, Nancy Ankrum with the Miami Herald, and Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, all with us talking about the state response and the local response as we begin to see the phase one reopening in South Florida with COVID-19. Your phone calls still join us here, 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. More coming up in a moment. We're back on the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting public radio. One of the greatest challenges for most Florida governors, typically a major hurricane. Governor Ron DeSantis has had the added task of dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. He was in the city of Doral on Thursday announcing the reopening of Broward and Miami-Dade counties beginning on this Monday, and he talked about the long road ahead for the state as the pandemic continues.
As we open up the economy and take safe, smart approach to doing that, we can't take our eye off the ball. The virus is still here.
WLRN asking listeners this week about their thoughts on Governor Ron DeSantis and how he's handled the response to the virus. Cliff Post tweeted at us, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best, I'd rate it a 6. It could have been a 9, Cliff said, had he reacted to the dismal unemployment system. Yeah, the unemployment filing system, which he has referred to as a jalopy, remains a big problem for the tens of thousands of Floridians that have lost jobs because of the public health response to COVID-19. You can tweet us at WLRN, also taking your phone calls. What do you think of Governor DeSantis's response to the pandemic? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Nancy Ankrum is along with us, the editorial page editor with the Miami Herald. Rick Christie holds that post down at the Palm Beach Post, and Rosemary O'Hara fulfills those obligations at the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Let's go here to Delray Beach, where we've got Richard on line. Let's see here. Richard is on line 4. Go ahead, Richard. You're on the radio.
Hello. Hello. Good afternoon.
Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's true what you just mentioned. The snafu with the unemployment was something unfortunate for the governor. I wonder just how much he could really do about it, because obviously he's not the IT people and he's not developing the systems to handle it. And of course he wants it done, but it's just not getting done. Okay, that being said, other than that, the job that he's done, in my opinion, has been phenomenal. Because look at our state. We are the third most populous state. Mm-hmm. We do have the largest population of elderly, from what I know of all the states, especially in the South Florida area and in the Central Florida area. Seriously, our numbers are ridiculously low, and I've been watching this for the last month. When I look at the northeastern states especially, and not counting Michigan, but New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, even Rhode Island, the mortality rates are ridiculously higher than they have been in Florida based on the numbers reported. Yeah. And again, when I say based on the numbers reported, who knows if they're higher, if they're lower, like you said today in the conference, they could be anything, you know.
But that's an interesting piece here, Richard, right? Because you're confident in the governor's response based upon the data, but you're also a little skeptical about the, I suppose, the completeness of that data, it sounds like.
I am skeptical about the completeness of the data, as we all should be, because right from the beginning, okay, we became coronaphobes, without a doubt, okay, and it really did scare the hell out of us, what was being reported, the numbers that were being reported, the disease. You know, if 95% of the people recover from this, should we really, really, really have gone into this, yes, we should have, this lockdown, to keep the hospitals from being overwhelmed? Okay, that's all done now. And our governor is doing the right thing. He's
Richard, I appreciate the phone call. I mean, it's all done now. And the challenge of moving forward, of course, is to keep it all done, to keep that capacity at hospitals from being overwhelmed. Nancy Ankrum, what do you hear there from Richard? Good marks for the governor, but a little bit of a caveat, probably quite a big caveat, saying he's still skeptical about the public availability, the public reporting of the data that's coming from the state.
Sure. I think that, you know, if you take a look at our editorials, we were not as sanguine about the governor's performance. We were much more...
you were much more critical. At one point, I think you said Florida deserves a governor.
I don't think we said it exactly that way.
Maybe not quite that declarative. Yeah. So noted.
I mean, point where we had to rewrote a headline that said, you know, coronavirus is real, Governor DeSantis, act like you give a damn. And that was a real reflection of our editorial board's frustration with getting a responsible and well-grounded message from the state leader that said, this is serious, I care about this, and I'm putting the health and well-being of the state's residents first and foremost. And we never really heard that.
Yeah.
And he did come, he was always lagging the locals who were on the ground here and in other South Florida counties and took it much more seriously much earlier.
All of you have published editorials criticizing the governor and the state regarding the lack of transparency around lots of different pieces of information when it comes to COVID-19. Rosemary O'Hara, what's the trajectory that you've been able to pick up on, if at all, regarding the state's interest in releasing some of the information that we saw not so forthcoming just a matter of a few weeks ago?
No, it's been a big disappointment that the governor wants to hold the information so close. So when we talk about the availability of testing, if you listen to his public conferences, public briefings, you would think, and you hear, oh, 10 million tests, you know, a million masks. You hear these numbers as though, boy, we have conquered the mountain. And yet we still are unable to test all of the people in nursing homes. Those places that are most vulnerable, we are not testing all the people who are in them to know if they're positive. We don't know about the number of deaths. The medical examiner's office, it is a public record how somebody died once the medical examiner does that. The governor's office, you know, it prevented chief medical examiner for the state from releasing this information. There's this dashboard that he's gotten credit for, and in some ways it's a high, it's valuable, it helps us track, but the data there is different than the numbers that we find in other places. So you know, understand that a politician wants to tell the best story possible. And from the beginning, he's tried to tell the best story possible, even as we watched the number of counties in which cases of coronavirus were diagnosed march through the state all the way to number 67, all 67 counties. And so I can't tell you that there, I wish there were a positive. People want him to succeed. People want us to succeed. We want to get through this together. But when somebody's holding all the information really close, it's hard to trust that the story they're telling is the whole story.
Rick Christie, your thoughts on this, particularly as it relates to the data and the information that's forthcoming from the state as the governor during these this phased reopening is pointing to that exact data for evidence of the flattening of the infection curve and the ability for the healthcare system to be able to kind of return to a new normal, but maintain the capacity for the potential of hospitalizations.
Well, as Rosemary just said, I think politicians are always going to try to put out the best numbers that suit their agenda and make them look good. Something that Nancy said earlier, man, that just keeps sticking with me, and which is kind of what we're talking about now, is that we really don't know for sure what the data is. And again, it's largely because of testing. And one of the things that Governor DeSantis and some other governors too, but DeSantis loves to do is to compare how we're doing versus some other states, particularly
New York,
those states
especially.
That we look good. Right. You know, but here's the thing. I really don't care about what's happening in New York, Michigan, Illinois, anywhere else. When I try to look at the data, I try to look at what should we be doing here. And when you look at the data, in terms of testing, particularly contact tracing, which we barely are doing at all, you know, that we're not doing very well at all. And I understood what the caller from Delray was saying earlier, that if you look at our numbers, they look really good. Well, in a state of 22 million, you know, I don't think we tested more than 3% of the population at this point, and which is really, really bad. Hmm. We should have a higher testing, testing regime than that by now, and we should have also ramped up contact tracing by now. I think. And for those folks who don't know, contact tracing is basically when you have someone who tests positive for the virus, then you track those people they've had contact with, so you can actually contain the virus. We're not really doing that at all. So basically, if somebody tests positive and everything right now, they don't even get a phone call in most cases. Hmm. So the other 100 people that they've come in contact with don't know that they may have come in contact with someone who's infected. We're not going to. That's what my concern is. Overall concern is with the reopening. Reopening is okay. I'm okay with reopening because we don't want people to go too stir crazy. But you have to do it with certain things in effect to do it safely. And if you're not doing things like testing at an adequate level, the way Nancy mentioned earlier, and if you have not actually ramped up your contact tracing, hired healthcare workers to go out and knock on people's doors and call and everything, then all you're doing is just waiting for a resurgence of the virus.
And here we are on the eve of a more full phase one reopening in South Florida. Miami-Dade and Broward counties will enter a phase one reopening with restaurants and retail outlets being able to open at 50% capacity on Monday. Palm Beach County expanding its reopening on Monday by opening the sand. The beaches in Palm Beach County will be open. Monroe County has been open as well. That checkpoint, though, on Card Sound Road and the Overseas Highway at the county line remain in place. We've got Ian in Miami on line 4. Go ahead, Ian. You are now on the radio.
Hi. I like the discussion about Ron DeSantis, and I just wanted to add my 2 cents, which is that I think he may be doing a slightly decent job, but his real problem is messaging or the lack thereof. One of the reasons why Governor Cuomo in New York got so much attention is because he's been on the air talking with lots of information every day, and although I don't think he's done a good job in New York, his messaging has been on point. Compare that to Governor DeSantis, people, you know, questioning the numbers coming out from the morgue, or just in Miami, not knowing what's open, what's closed, it's very confusing. I think his messaging has really been a failure, and that's why people think he's doing so bad. Hmm. I do think he has had some big failings, but he's not clear.
Ian, I appreciate you sharing your voice to this discussion here about Governor Ron DeSantis and the state's response to COVID-19 as South Florida begins to join the other counties in reopening. We're going to continue with the opinion page editors with the South Florida major newspaper organizations, major media organizations, the Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. More of your phone calls as well at 800-743-9576. Quick time out here on the Florida Roundup, 800-743-9576. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. The threat of climate change has coincided with the threat from COVID-19. State officials are preparing for the short-term impacts of a hurricane season during this pandemic. The long-term impacts of dealing with both crises could mean that one issue might demand a greater focus. So join the conversation. Have you thought about this climate change concern or issue during the pandemic? What are your concerns as we head right into hurricane season on June 1st and already have a potential system just offshore, but thankfully poses no real threat shorter term, to Florida? 800-743-WLRN. That's our phone number, 800-743-9576. Nancy Ankrum with the Miami Herald, Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post, and Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, all the opinion page editors for those media organizations with us. Rosemary, yeah, climate change and COVID here. There was a beginning to, it felt like momentum on the local and even the state level with the DeSantis administration regarding beginning to address the impact of climate change in Florida prior to COVID-19. These are existential crises. How have you been thinking about this intersection now that COVID and the pandemic have, perhaps rightfully so, taken all of the attention in the short term?
There's this wonderful editorial cartoon where there's a graphic of the wave, the modelers, you know, here's the coronavirus wave and here's the peak and there's the flow and ebbing of it. And right behind it on this chart is this huge tidal wave that is climate change.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's not just that the focus has been taken off, but the funding that's going to be available, the economic hit that our cities, counties, state are taking means that there's going to be budget cuts, you know, not just for schools and local governments, but for infrastructure projects. And let me just put in a plug here, too, for your readers to be sure to fill out the census form, because like only half of us have done that, you know, and if we don't, we're not going to get the money we need to do these big projects. In Orlando, they have sidelined a study on whether to close the coal-fired power plant because of the expense of it. So it's, you know, it's interesting when the all of us who are talking right now have this collaboration, media collaboration, to raise awareness about climate change. And when we first kicked it off, we were delayed because of one crisis,
right,
and that was the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. And that crisis just sucked all the air out of, you know, everybody's attention was there. And now in this second year, this other crisis, the coronavirus, is deflecting attention. And it's because climate change is this bigger, longer term, not as in your face every day as the others.
And Nancy, there's not the promise or the hope for a vaccine in 12 months or 18 months to climate change. It is a multi-decade, multi-generational issue to wrestle with. And Rosemary's point about the finances is an enormously important one, as there had been a head of steam being built up, local and state governments particularly, regarding the financial resources necessary to adapt.
Absolutely correct. I'm a little more optimistic as to climate change making its way back to the front pages, only because after all of this time, the advocacy is there, the very vocal advocacy that has gotten society to this point of acknowledging that climate change is a big, big problem. That won't go away. Yes, there's going to be short and long-term hurdles to really putting it front and center, but I don't think it's going to drop off. I'm hoping it's not going to drop off agendas totally.
And Rick Christie, we can't help but notice some of the natural environment effects of the economic consequences of the public health measures taken to slow the spread of COVID-19. Certainly, yes, a lot less traffic, both on the roads and in Biscayne Bay and out on the ocean. But, you know, we've heard anecdotally from fishermen about schools of fish returning to places that they hadn't seen for a good number of years.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, COVID-19 has really been beneficial for the environment. And this this past Earth Day, which I think was, what, the 50th anniversary of Earth Day or something?
That sounds about right.
It was a great celebration when you looked at some of our rivers and everything, and even the air. I think there were, like, satellite photos showing just how clean the air is now versus what it was a year ago or 6 months ago. And a lot of that is because people aren't flying as they were before, so you don't have a lot of jets in the air and everything. And then I was really struck by a picture of Venice and the water in Venice and how beautiful the water was compared to where it was like 6 months ago when all those tourists and stuff were there.
Yeah.
So I think that one of the beneficial things could be that COVID-19 has shown us that the bigger issues with climate change definitely are man-made, that they cannot sit back now and say, oh, well, man has been having a huge impact on the way our climate looks. Well, obviously, it is, if you look at the before and after pictures. So I do believe that, there still will be a lot of momentum, as Nancy mentioned, regarding climate change, because there is so much advocacy now, such as with our project, The Invading Sea, and everything. But I'm seeing here on the ground, as they probably are in their own counties, our budgets are being stretched. And I know in Palm Beach County, it's going to be really difficult to move as well as we were, or to stay to keep up the momentum in the direction that we were after we finally get a vaccine and we get everything going again, because the revenue for our governments is down, local governments is down, and there's still things to be taken care of. So that may slow down some of the progress regarding resiliency and things of that nature, but I don't think it will slow down the discussion about climate change.
To all three of you, great to have you back on the program. And I do hope that you and your families and colleagues are well, and for that matter, everybody who's able to listen to us here, to stay safe here and enjoy responsibly this phase 1 reopening. We'll continue to cover it and talk about it here on the Roundup. Rick Christie.
Well, we know you're hoping for schools to open in the fall, Tom. We know you got that secret.
The kids are doing okay. Let's put it this way. I mean, I put the radio studio in the same room as the Xbox on purpose in the Hudson household. Listen, Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post. Rick, always great to have you on. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Thank
Rosemary you. O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Wonderful to hear you again, Rosemary. Great to have
you. Nice to hear your voice too, Tom.
And our great friend Nancy Ankrum with our partner, the Miami Herald. Nancy, hope you and Mom and everybody are doing well in the Ankrum house.
We are all just fine. Thank you so much.
Thank you as well. Finally, on the Roundup this week, South Florida is remembering Arva Moore Parks. She was a local historian and champion of preserving historic buildings across Miami. WLRN's Katie Lepre produced this obituary, and we hear from some of Parks' friends and colleagues. Here's an excerpt.
A fierce preservation warrior, Arva researched ordinances, mobilized preservation community, including Dade Heritage Trust and the villagers, and stormed city halls countywide to save Miami's buildings, trees, and neighborhoods.
She was also an activist, and from very early on, she was involved with all segments of Miami, definitely historic preservation, but the civil rights movement. She fought for social justice, and bridging the racial divide in Miami.
That was Nesta Rodriguez and Dr. Dorothy Fields talking about Arva Moore Parks, the South Florida historian who passed away this week. She was 81 years old, and a big thanks from WLRN for protecting Miami's history. You can hear more about Arva Moore Parks and the obituary at WLRN.org. That'll do it for the roundup this week. It is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Lance Dixon is our digital editor. News director is Taryn Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. WLRN's director of radio programming is Jason Zabka. The director of radio operations and the show's technical supervisor is Peter J. Meritz. Richard Ives answered the phones this week. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. And above all, thanks for supporting public radio. This program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.